This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Tech Talk, and on today's show, we're going back to Milan for my SaaS Analytics Experience 2018 conference recap. Last week, you may have heard my first episode on how AI is shaping our future and a deeper look into cybersecurity and fraud. So today, we're going to take a look in the space of IoT or the Internet of Things and how artificial intelligence is again at the core of developing our future cities and also our lives. So let's start with IoT then. I don't need to remind you just how explosive this space has been. Just look around you. There's something that's connected to the internet. Vehicles, wearables, RFID sensors, even your shoes are probably connected somehow. When you look up online for the IoT market and stats, you'll mostly find them in the billions. One report showed that in 2018 alone, around 3.6 billion devices that are connected to the internet are used for daily tasks. And in 2019, we're likely to see a bigger push towards 5G connection, and hopefully here in Malaysia too, by the way. And this will only add to the number of devices as they become faster and sensors become cheaper. I got a chance to speak to Jason Mann. He's the Vice President, the Internet of Things at SAS. It's a newly created division again by SAS to oversee the IoT space. And we began by talking about just how different is the IoT business model, as SAS was never a stranger to this space, but creating an entirely new division just to oversee IoT must have meant something was different.
What we found is that the business model has driven change within our organization. I'll just point on a few elements of that. One, the most simple terms is pricing. The market is transitioning from a software-based pricing or server-based or compute capacity pricing to event-based pricing, consumption-based. All of the cloud vendors have kind of taught our industry that this is how we charge. So we've had to make some changes with respect to our pricing models to support that. Also, historically, we had sold for deployment into on-premise or cloud server environments. What we're finding is that the IoT space extends that model into these edge devices that I mentioned earlier. So that drives a different pricing model. The industry is used to paying for software as some percentage of an edge device. It's a much lower starting point than SaaS is historically supported. So now it's a combination of server-based pricing as well as edge, and then the introduction of consumption-based pricing. So just some of the foundational principles are different for our company. And then you get to the use cases. And what we're finding is that as the amount of data, the amount of sensors that are being deployed, and the adoption and uptake of those concepts, we're seeing new business models. So if you think about it in retail, it used to be you would look at buying habits, buying patterns, generate a customer profile, and you could generate promotions to them. Now you've extended that to where there's situational awareness. By tracking their mobile phone or using video, you recognize that they've crossed the threshold within your store. Perhaps they're facing an end cap. And being able to combine what was historically that customer profile with the ability to have situational awareness and proximity to any number of displays or advertising, you can generate a spot promotion to that person. So that's an entirely new business model that didn't exist previously. On the industrial side, with the ability to now deploy significant breadth and depth of algorithms into these edge devices, connectivity is no longer a concern. You're not having to bring all of the data back into a central hub, whether it be on-premise or cloud. Some decisioning is determined and then send it back out. You can do it right at the edge, right at the source of data. So those scenarios where reduced latency decisioning is required, you can now support many of those business models. So while some of the foundational elements, the algorithms, the overall objective, things like predictive failure or degradation of performance, quality yield, you still hear the same business problems, business objectives that are being expressed. you can just attack them at different points within their distributed environments.
And you may have heard this term before, prescriptive analytics, the area where business analytics that seeks to find the best course of action for a given situation. So, are we moving into an era of more prescriptive than predictive?
No, I think predictive is still the goal. I give an example sometimes within a wind farm, right? You have a couple of scenarios. Obviously, downtime is their biggest expense. So it's a requirement for them to be able to monitor the performance of the turbines and evaluate when they're trending into a band that requires a service interval or a maintenance visit. So that still happens very much the way it always has. Perhaps there's a bit more granularity of data from the sensors. Now you're able to expand that into real-time review of the operational parameters of the windmill itself. And at that point, you're looking for trends towards a catastrophic failure or an unintended failure where you would trigger an autonomous shutdown of the device. So these things operate in concert with one another. It's not independent. So you can see that the objective is still uptime and efficiency of operation and predictive maintenance. You just have new tools in the toolbox to address that.
While the IoT space is thriving, the number of devices are in the billions. There are, however, challenges in this space. Here Jason explains.
So we see a couple. If you go back 3 or 4 years ago, there was an analyst group, Gartner, and they had issued a report that defined the top vendors in the IoT space. And the top two were network gear vendors. And what that told me is that we had really narrowed our view of IoT projects to data onboarding and data aggregation. Well, there's not a lot of value to be achieved by pulling the data together. You need to generate some insight into that. So early on, I think there was some concern that there wasn't a return on the investment in some of these IoT projects. So I think we've trended away from that now. Now what we're starting to see is a lot of the IoT projects are, you know, a few very smart people, some open source code, a data set that they apply that to, and you can generate some interesting insights from those types of projects. However, if you don't have a plan to operationalize that, it normally dies on the vine, right? There's no extended value to that project. So we're starting to see some concern with the investment that you can't put it into practice. So our investment in the space has really been around creating that support for the total IoT analytics lifecycle to be able to sustain value, deploy and operationalize into an enterprise environment, and then continue to improve that return on investment over time. So I think those continue to be similar challenges that we'll see in the next few years.
And if there's one thing that needs to happen with IoT, is that the things need to be able to speak to one another, no matter the brand. To live in a world where your Apple smartphone can talk to the device from a different manufacturer, it is, after all, the Internet of Things.
So again, we talked earlier about the changes within our company and what changes we've made to align to the IoT market. And I'll talk about a couple that hits that question. So while we really think that we're a world leader in analytics, we also recognize that the algorithms don't provide the total solution to the problem. We talk about the IoT ecosystem. And within that, there's domain expertise, there's network infrastructure, there's compute infrastructure, there's your cloud provider. Many industries are transitioning some of their business models to a services-based model, so you need that to be in place. So our goal is to be able to be the analytics engine that plugs into that, right? If that is your objective, then you have to be able to have the modularity to plug into these open-source infrastructures or a hybrid approach of both proprietary and open architectures. So that's also been a change for us. And in that, you start to lose the brand. This is, the solution by company A. This is an open architecture that you're providing value to. And in the cases where we're working with our channel partners, it's a combined value that we're either extending their value through enhanced analytics or the other way around. They're providing structural components for customers that we have. So I do believe that's a real change in the market that is transitioning to objectives-based, outcomes-based engagements. One of our use cases and examples, and we've had it here at the event, is with GE Transportation. In the case of GE Transportation, they have a business model that is services, in this case, locomotive operators. And they had infrastructure already in place where they're helping them with operational efficiency, reduced fuel burn, predictive maintenance. They created their own edge device, EdgeLink, that's a small toaster-sized box that goes in locomotives. They recognized that they wanted to increase the value of the services that they were providing to their end customers, and they partnered with SAS to be an analytics engine that is deployed within their server and within that edge device as well. Now, within that, you can see the ecosystem that starts to form, because before we can operate in the EdgeLink device, we have to make sure we operate on the Intel chipset or x86 architecture, which drives that. So there's a partnership extension with Intel. There's always the network infrastructure that's required to get the data from the locomotives back into the server side of the business, whether it's connected or batch download after it receives connection. So there's wireless implications, there's network implications. So they see the requirement to bring these players into these opportunities as well. And only by having each element perform can you reach that ultimate outcome.
We'll take a short break, but when we come back in just a moment, we'll talk a little bit about smart cities and also how to begin your journey with artificial intelligence. You're listening to Tech Talk on BFM 89.9.
Bloggers for Malaysia. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back. My name is Jeff Sandhu, and we are taking a look at how artificial intelligence is seeping into the areas of the Internet of Things and smart cities. And earlier on, we heard from Jason Mandy, Vice President Internet of Things at SAS. It's a newly created division to oversee the IoT space. And one area that IoT will really thrive is smart cities. And recently, SAS was the chosen analytics provider for China's eastern city of Wuxi. And Wuxi is the latest smart city project under SAS's belt, as they recently just launched an IoT innovation center.
So I was just there a few weeks back for the grand opening of the innovation center there. So if you're familiar with Wuxi, it is the pilot city for China with respect to smart cities. So they have made an extensive investment with the deployment of sensors throughout the city. Their phase one initiative is focused on air and water quality. And in a very similar scenario, they have created a broad ecosystem of underlying technology partners and infrastructure partners. Huawei is their partner in that space. And then they have device manufacturers that are monitoring the air. They have devices that are in place evaluating water clarity and runoff and depth of some of the major canal that runs through the city. And they pull all of that information together. And SAS is the analytics partner in the space to generate some insight from that data. So very exciting opportunity, and one that I hope extends our opportunities into greater China.
But how long would it take before a citizen would actually notice the impact of a smart city?
Right, so I think it depends on the phasing and what they're deploying those initiatives to. So on air quality and water quality, they may not, it's not like a light switch turns on. It's a change, it drives changes in policy. It drives changes in things like pollution generators, reduction in that over time based on evaluating the impact of those generators over time. So it may be a policy change, and sometimes that may be an extended event. The flip side of that is with traffic optimization, which is oftentimes one of the objectives. You may see it immediately with optimization routines based on traffic patterns in cities. You can change behavior. I know it's a great example in Singapore where they have the surge pricing. Now, maybe the constituents aren't happy when the pricing is increased, but it can drive behavior and reduce traffic congestion within a city. So it can be almost immediate, or it can be general policy changes over time.
And in 2019, what does Jason see that will be exciting for him?
I think it's adoption. We passed the art of the possible. I think we're now on the backside of the trial through POCs. which I would describe 2018 as the year of the proof of concept. And now we are starting to see deployments. So I mentioned the GE partnership earlier. It started with a pilot with a single operator, and now that's starting to expand. After it gets out of rail, then we would like to see that go into mining. So it's adoption based on quality proof of concepts that have reached the objective. So the thing I'm excited about is wider scale adoption as we look at 19.
Next up, you'll hear from two individuals working in the space of artificial intelligence. The first is Christina Conti. She's the Senior Business Solutions Manager at SAS Global Technology Practice for Analytics. And she talks about what are some of the real changes that AI has brought into her field.
I think it's a lot of things. Before, being a statistician, being somebody that loved to play with numbers was something that was a very niche play. Now everybody's realizing, because there's more data, there's more needs, that we can extract real value, real potential from analyzing data. And we are seeing it as customers even, that AI is improving our lives. So the openness of people towards these applications is increasing more and more, and it's making us realize more and more how important it is to be able to use data-driven ideas and not just leverage on what we already know.
And the next voice you'll hear is Saurav Gupta. He's the Director of Advanced Analytics and Artificial Intelligence Product Management at SAS. And here's his take on the changes that he's seen.
I think from my perspective, the big change, as you were saying, it has kind of come out from being a niche play to a mass play. You know, that because everyone, you and I, use it on a daily basis, let's say in terms of Google Maps or Apple Maps. So in some sense, everywhere around us, it's kind of playing a much bigger role, and the convenience it provides, right? At the end of the day, it's simplifying tasks. It's the conveniences that AI is beginning to provide to us on a daily basis. That's what is leading to a bigger adoption. So what has truly changed, I think, in the last year or so, are we are beginning to kind of see more consumable applications, if I will, if I can call it that, and that's leading to a greater adoption of AI.
But where do we begin in our journey with AI, right? Most would understand the impact and the benefits, but would struggle in knowing where to begin or just how to ensure a smooth implementation. Here, Christina explains, followed by Saurav.
So the way I see it, I think if you look at it from an organization's perspective, they want to do it. But sometimes they don't know exactly what they want to do. So they think, I want to do AI, and they have an algorithm in mind, they have deep learning in mind, or they want to do a chatbot, and this is what I have in mind. But really, sometimes what we suggest is that there is a step back, and we look at the entire business process of what they do, and we help them try to find a solution using AI to a business problem that they have. It may be an existing business problem, it may be a new business problem, but we try to make sure that we capture something that relates to business and it's not just the hype. And that is where the only place where the true education can start. We can't just focus on, let's see what we get by trying deep learning. We really have to find something that is applicable to their business. For consumers, it's very different. We can take benefits of AI in everyday life without even knowing about it. We actually just do it, as Saurav said, we do it every day anyway. We already do it all the time.
So I think, let me just first address that. I think organizations are very interested in taking advantage of AI. I think that's where kind of question began. And a lot of the organizations are kind of beginning to kind of try and leverage AI from two or three different perspectives in my mind. One is they're trying to automate processes, right? That's kind of one area where they're trying to see if artificial intelligence can help. And these are more automation of mundane tasks. So if, for example, if someone is looking at invoices and then codifying them into a computer, right? So they're trying to see if they can make those processes more efficient. I think the other aspect where customers are or organizations are trying to leverage artificial intelligence is in customer interactions. Can I make, and this is more B2C, can I make interactions with my customers, if I'm a bank, right? How can I improve my interaction with my customer, retail customers? What kind of capabilities can I provide them? If I'm a credit card company, what kind of capabilities can I provide you? If I'm a medical care, healthcare provider, how can I leverage AI to better give healthcare to patients? I think those are some of the bigger examples that will impact all of our daily lives. I think the key is, as Christina said, a lot of people have a vision in terms of how they may want to leverage AI, but they're unable to define which specific problems they want to solve that make up that vision. So I think a lot of struggle right now is in clearly defining the business problem so that they can solve it, leveraging some of the AI techniques.
AI seems like a silver bullet to cure everything in today's world, if you look at it. I asked both of them, what are some of the misconceptions of artificial intelligence from their discussions?
I think that it's a very good question. And I think that the biggest challenge that I see, the biggest concern that I always have is people think that AI is, as you said, is going to solve everything. What I think the biggest misconception is that sometimes customers don't realize that you're still going to need data, true data, working data, good data to do AI. AI is not going to work on bad data. It's still going to be bad. We are still going to see that. And two, you can't just, and the second one is very linked to kind of what I said, is you can't just think that the algorithm is going to solve it all. You're still going to have to put your mind onto it in a way. And you can leverage on what AI can do for you to extract the best, but you cannot expect AI to be a crystal ball. And this is the biggest misconception I see with our, when I talk to customers.
See, right
people.
Now, I think we were, in fact, Christina and I were having another conversation about this yesterday. Right now, AI, what defines the limit of AI is human creativity, human thinking, right? Because right now, AI is about solving smaller tasks or automating tasks specifically. So it's only what human being can think of is what can get solved by AI. And to me, if you're trying to try and apply AI to every problem, that's, I think, is an overkill. One should always try and solve the problem in the simplest possible manner. And AI may not be the answer to every problem that we're trying to solve.
And if you remember last week, I left you with a clip from my chat with Oliver Schabenberger, the COO and the CTO of SAS, and the continuous shift of the goalposts in achieving that 100% perfect algorithm model. Here's Saurabh and Christina's take on this, as they are, after all, heavily involved in the development of artificial intelligence.
AI is a line in the, is a line in the sand, because every time we achieve something, it's no longer AI because we have achieved it. I mean, do we think of, I mean, autonomous cars, we are still thinking in terms of AI because it's not there generally available around us. Only few cars have it. And to your point, we have run into accident. But do you really think of maps as artificial intelligence?
I think of general cars,
yes,
as artificial intelligence. Yeah. I mean, we're always going to put one line further. I think, in a way, as a statistician, I'm reaching 100% perfect is never going to be possible. And actually, a model that achieves 100% is a wrong model. Because it's not taking into account anything else than the data it's been built with. And we want AI to take, and this is what we do as humans, we take into account the unknown. And this is where AI is really challenging us, because it's trying to do the same thing that we do, take into account the unknown. So if we look at self-driving cars, it has to learn to take into account that unknown. But again, if we think about cars, engines of cars, we don't even think about them anymore. And they kept improving. I mean, the first engine was terrible. Every first thing was terrible, and there's always going to be something that's going to challenge us. And even we are not perfect, so we cannot build something that's 100% perfect if we are the first ones that are going to make mistakes.
So what's going to happen in 2019? Are we going to see a progressive push of AI in many more different industries? Christina and Saurabh gives me their prediction for 2019.
I think a lot more customers will try to build on AI applications for their businesses. I think we are already seeing a new wave of customers wanting to look at new data like images, videos, using them in real-time processes of various kinds like manufacturing, insurance, retail, everywhere. We're going to see a lot of more interest, I think, in using natural language, the ability to understand how we say, replicate what we say. But I think in parallel, we're also going to see just the need to do more analytics on what we have in our businesses. So seeing the chance to do more data-driven analysis, data-driven knowledge, and learn from that.
I think from my perspective, from a business or an organization perspective, I think the hype of AI will settle down a little bit. and people will get a much clearer picture of what are the different types of use cases they can solve with AI. Now, if I turn it around and I kind of look at it from me as a consumer of AI, right? So I'm a consumer of these businesses that are trying to leverage AI. I think my expectations will continue to grow. My expectations will grow in terms of if I think we always kind of call this interaction of a customer with an organization as a moment of truth, what kind of experience you're providing me. My expectations in terms of that experience improving will grow drastically. I'll always think about, okay, I have already given this organization my data. Why is it not offering me a better, more personalized user or customer experience? So I think improvement in customer experience, whether it's in form of buying a product, whether it's form of designing a product, in form of me getting a product, whether it's through shipment or going to a retail store and buying it, in form of customer care that comes after buying the product. I think to me, those are the areas where as a consumer, I would look to see a lot of improvements. And I think that's an area we'll see grow in 2019.
And that was my experience from the SaaS Analytics Experience 2018 conference in Milan. And earlier on the show, you heard from Jason Mann. He's the Vice President of the Internet of Things at SaaS. And then you heard the two brains behind the push of AI within SaaS, Christina Conti and Saurabh Gupta. And if you heard last week's episode as well, it's apparent that we must shift our mindset towards AI. Not asking how smart AI can be, but how AI can make us smarter. And if you missed any parts of this show or even last week's show, you can download the podcast. It's available on the BFM website or better yet, get the BFM app. My name is Jeff Sandhu and this has been Tech Talk on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.